Episode 8, Women and Retirement. Welcome to the Retirement Resource, the one place committed to providing the information, resources, and tools you need to navigate the often complex world of retirement planning with confidence and clarity. We're going to discuss both the financial and non-financial aspects of a successful retirement, and we're going to have fun. Welcome back to the Retirement Resource, the one place committed to helping you navigate the often complex world of retirement planning. And this is the place where I'm committed to giving you the tools, resources, experts, and things you need to really do this in a way that's going to light you up. It's going to be exciting, and retirement's going to be successful. And I'm here today with a dear friend. This is Kate Stalter. Kate is the president of Better Money Decisions, a registered RIA with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix. And I want to talk about something today, Kate, that I think you might have a little bit of expertise on.
Oh, sure. Happy to talk about whatever, Bo. This is great to be here.
Nothing like putting a friend on the spot, huh?
I love it.
Kate has the background with the financial planning, and I want to talk some. This has been coming up, and it's in the media this week, actually. We're talking about women specifically and women in retirement. And I know that's a segment you've dealt with and worked with a lot. So what are some things we can teach our listeners that are women that they need to make sure they're addressing, or maybe some things that are a little overlooked when it comes to planning financially for their future?
You know, the timing is perfect, as you mentioned, because we are coming up on International Women's Day, is March 8th this year. So that is quite a timely topic. One of the biggest things that really affects everybody, but women in particular, is the idea of longevity. So, you know, more and more Americans are living to their 90s, more and more are living to 100, and, you know, just pause for a minute. There are some reasons for that. We have better medical care today. There are conditions that a generation ago would have killed people that today are treatable with medication, just pop a pill. Right. We also have, society has changed. So fewer people smoke, right? That was a big thing that was killing a lot of people.
Right.
And very, you know, relatively few Americans smoke these days. We've had advances in treatment of heart disease. More and more people know how to diet and exercise. I mean, that's something you and I talk about frequently, right? Is maintaining right. Our health through diet and exercise. So there's quite a bit that's gone into this. I mean, we have safer cars these days than they did. So many, many things. So more people are living to their 90s or 100. Now, 80%, Bo, of the people who live to 100 are women.
Okay.
Yeah. And I saw a statistic somewhere. I don't have it at my fingertips, but, and it's probably one of these, maybe one of these sources of folk wisdom, but I think there's something to it that says that most men die married and women die single.
And that makes sense.
It does, because, you know, if you think about the very elderly people that you know, they're probably mostly women. And many of them are widows, right?
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. And it makes sense in this longevity. I think this first key we're talking about, longevity, to me, what's always been fascinating with really addressing the reality of longevity is it multiplies every other risk that there is when it comes to financial planning.
Oh, it sure does. It sure does. Because, you know, there's this idea that I'm happy to see in the past 5 years or so, it's going away pretty rapidly, and I'm glad to see that. But it was this idea of you would estimate your own longevity based on your parents' life expectancy. Oh. And that's not entirely accurate. Yeah, genetics plays a role, but so do all the other factors that I just mentioned earlier. I mean, I have kind of a little story about that I like to tell. It was a gentleman who was I believe he never became a client. He was a prospect at a firm where I used to work. And I remember he came in to meet with us one day, and we were talking to him about the longevity question. And it was very funny because he started saying, well, my dad died at 68, and I don't really expect I'm going to live much longer than that. Well, it turns out, Bo, his dad had one of those very dangerous jobs where he was breathing asbestos. I mean, it was a generation ago, and he was very unhealthy, and he smoked. Now, this fellow that came in, he was a scientist at one of the labs here in New Mexico, so he had a very different life than his father did. Oh, and by the way, he mentioned almost as an aside, he goes, oh, my mom is almost 90 and she's doing great. So it's like, which data point are you going to pick? You know? So I think that idea is kind of going away. And I think more people are understanding that longevity is an issue that is, you know, is likely to affect them. I mean, even when you look at the life expectancy tables in the U.S., they're a little misleading. So we see these tables that show that the average life expectancy in the U.S. is about 78 as of now, maybe a little more than that. See, that's misleading, though, because that includes people who died young. It includes people who died as children, as teenagers, in their 20s. By the time a man or woman in North America reaches age 65, he or she should count on a lifespan of the mid-80s. So 84, 85, 86. That's what you should count on by the time you've gotten there. And let's think about it, because when you're 65, you're not engaging in risky behaviors that you may have been in your 20s.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right.
And yeah.
No, it's the longevity piece. I don't mean to keep harping on that, but I think that's just crucial, because I've seen so many people in planning that they're literally okay, or they're working off a financial calculator that is okay planning to their life expectancy.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
And out of a couple, statistically, one of them is going to live beyond that life expectancy. And it's going to be a very bad lifestyle if that happens to happen.
Okay, and you brought up a couple of things right there. So that's exactly right. So first of all, it's prudent to plan for a life expectancy of 100, whether you're a man or a woman. Just be prudent and expect that you're going to need enough money to last until you're 100. Let's start with that. Then the second thing is, like you said, some of these older people, yeah, they tend to be women who do live longer. And then you have, again, unfortunately, this is kind of, we're veering into another topic here, and it's one I don't like to see, but unfortunately in this day and age, we still see it. We still see that the women often delegate the investment decisions and the more high-level financial planning decisions to their husbands. Now, not always the case. Not always. We have actually plenty of traditional couples among our clientele who it is actually the woman who's kind of driving the decisions there. But traditionally, it has been the woman has let her husband do that. She has paid the bills and done the shopping and done the household budgeting. And on the surface of it, it seems like a fair division of labor. But really, it's not, because the woman is then left in the dark if her husband passes away. She doesn't understand, why do I own these investments? How long are these designed to sustain my lifestyle? Was there even a plan done? So these investments, this money here that is invested, it will work for me until I'm age 100. What are the expense ratios here? What is the risk level? So many of these questions don't get answered in sort of the traditional old-fashioned stockbroker world. And unfortunately, there's a lot of those people still around. The point is, and I know we're focusing on women here, and that's mostly traditionally, I guess, who you've seen who haven't really understood the investments to that degree, not because they're incapable, just because they haven't put in the time and effort. But again, this applies to everybody. If you're a man listening to this and your wife is the one who manages the investments and you don't have a clue, you also need to get a clue and find out what's going on.
Well, I think that's important, really, point to make right there, Kate, that you're bringing up, is that it makes, in a way, logically, it makes sense. Okay, we're a partner. Let's focus on our strengths. You take this, I'll take that, and we'll proceed. But that's assuming life goes on forever. You know, somebody doesn't die before somebody else, which is not the reality of how life works. And I think for both spouses, whoever takes the lead role in that, the thing to know, if you don't include your significant other in those decisions, whether it might be just like a quarterly touch base to know what the strategy really is, you're really leaving them ripe to be taken advantage of. And that's something I would like to see improved.
Yeah, that's really true. You know, as you were saying that, I thought of a story, and this was at a conference that I attended about a year ago. And there was a financial advisor, a guy who was based in Colorado, and he was one of the speakers on the panel with me. And he had this story that unfortunately the audience heard it as heartwarming, and that's the way he intended it, but I was horrified. His story was the fact that he had a client, a man, I think he called him Howard, and Howard passed away. And up until that point, this is shocking, he had never spoken to Howard's wife. So I know. So he called her up and she was very worried that she was going to be okay. And as it turned out, there was plenty of money. She was able to take her family on a cruise, and everybody in the audience applauded because it was so heartwarming. I'm sitting there going, how come he never talked to her until Howard died?
Right.
And I would also say, for the wife, how come she never stepped up and said, I need to attend these meetings with you?
Right. And I think that's an awareness of those maybe traditional roles, they need to shift because it hurts. It hurts the family as a whole if it's not addressed and everybody's not on the same page.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one thing is, if you are listening to this and you are working with an advisor, and maybe your spouse is the person that always or primarily meets with them, just go along for the meetings. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand every now and then there's a meeting that only one spouse can attend just due to time constraints. That happens. I'm talking about like the bigger picture. Both spouses, both partners need to be involved with this.
And there's a side benefit to that too, Kate, that I found is that when a couple that hasn't regularly communicated about money actually create a process, whether it's monthly or quarterly, like we talked about, to where they actually sit down and get on the same page, I've had comments come back like, this is the best communication therapy for our marriage we've ever had, when they just started talking about money.
It's so true. We have at our firm, one of our senior advisors in our Phoenix office is a woman named Nancy Hetrick. Nancy is one of the national thought leaders on the topic of financial planning for divorce. And, you know, I've heard anecdotes that Nancy has told, but I know she can talk about this topic all day long about people who were never on the same page financially, and it did not end up well.
Right. Well, let's keep moving. So we're really, we nailed down the longevity and a lot of the things that kind of come out from that. One of the things, I do monthly workshops around optimizing your Social Security statement here in Social Security planning here around Atlanta. And I continue to do those because I realize people just don't have good information. So they typically are making decisions based on what their neighbor did, what somebody at work told them to do, or maybe even what the Social Security office told them to do, which they really aren't allowed to give out advice anyway.
Right.
So let's bring that up, because I've seen some scenarios where I've really seen, particularly women, put in a bad position because this wasn't paid attention to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even though, as you well know, and many of the listeners may know, the rules did change back in 2016, but there are still reasons to think about this and plan very carefully. You know, there are still spousal strategies that are available, but the biggest thing is you want to at least crunch the numbers and understand the impact of waiting versus taking the benefit at age 62, which is the minute it becomes available. So, you know, particularly if you are the higher earner in the couple, you want to wait as long as possible to take that benefit, because when you pass away, your surviving spouse will get the higher of the two benefits. So, you know, if you have been a high earner all your career, at least the higher earner in the couple, and then you take your benefit at 62, for whatever reason, you think it's going away, whatever reason you think you have to take it at 62, and I could debate those reasons too. But say you take it early, and then when you pass away, your spouse is left with a lower benefit for life. So think about that. I think a lot of people don't really realize how to factor that into their financial planning. So that's a great comment, Bo.
Well, yeah. And you know, I think I've seen that where somebody took Social Security as soon as they could, even when they didn't really need it, and left their spouse with 55% plus less of a pension. So I think a way I really like to shift and have people think about this, Kate, is don't think about yourself individually. Here's my earnings record. Here's your earnings record. What's the biggest benefit we have on the table, and how could we potentially maximize that for the life of our family?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, another thing I would add to that too is if you are divorced and not currently remarried, you might want to also think about whether taking the Social Security benefit from your former spouse is a good idea if that person was a high earner. You know, now in a lot of cases, you crunch the numbers and you look at the fact and you say, oh, okay, taking half the benefit from a spouse or a former spouse, nah, it's just better off to take my own. That's often the case. But at least you want to go into this making an informed decision. And you're absolutely right. Don't go by what your neighbor said, what your coworker said. I can't tell you how many clients talk to me about things they hear at work. Right. And it's just like, wait a minute. That person either has, often you could tell there's some kind of political agenda going on, some kind of political based fear, which is rampant in today's society. Or maybe it's a strategy that is perfectly valid for your neighbor or your coworker, but is completely irrelevant for you. So everybody, this is kind of one of these situations where you have to think for yourself. You have to do the research. The other thing is, and you made a great point, Social Security employees don't always give the best advice. And I've got horror stories about that. Here's one. There was a woman that I worked with. She was 64 at the time. She had not yet begun taking Social Security. She was going to wait. But she went into the office because she had to clear up some details about her account, as she had some questions. I think it was pertaining to her ex-husband. And the clerk at the Social Security office, who was a young person in her 30s, was horrified that here was this 64-year-old woman who had not yet taken her benefit. And she was almost apoplectic that why would you be leaving money on the table? Well, that is just short-sighted thinking, has nothing to do with the financial plan that had been made for this woman. So please, people, don't listen to the advice of the Social Security employees without checking with a financial advisor who understands the Social Security system, like Bo does, like I do, and many, many planners do. Now, not all do. And you have to be very careful about what planner you work with, too.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a key point that I think is a protection piece. I think you should, whenever you work with your financial advisor, bring up Social Security. Are we doing everything we can do to optimize our strategy? Are we coordinating Social Security with the rest of our benefits? And unfortunately, Kate, you might have a different experience. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be brushed aside because most financial advisors just don't have the knowledge to help with this stuff. And there's a couple of reasons, unfortunately. One, they weren't trained in it. We weren't trained up in this business unless we go out specifically to get additional training in this. And the other, unfortunately, is not addressed by a lot of financial advisors because they don't get compensated to give that, to learn that and know that. There's not really a compensation structure for that. So ask those questions. See if somebody, if your advisor is not knowledgeable in Social Security, for a lot of Americans, it's 50% of their income. So it's important and it's worth knowing. And one other thing, Kate, to your point, basically, their advice can be take it at 62, take it at full retirement age, which for most will be 66, or take it at 70, when the reality is there's over 500 possible ways to take your Social Security. So it's worth doing it the best you possibly can and not leaving money on the table.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the other piece of that equation is if you're a fairly young retiree, and we have some clients like this who have retired prior to their full Social Security age, that's when your financial planner, your advisor has to sit down and say, okay, let's calculate, are you better off taking Social Security early to fill in some of the income gap? Or are you better off drawing down from your portfolio? Now, I know a lot of advisors, even those who are fiduciaries, you got to be careful. A lot of them will say, oh, take Social Security early. And why is that? Because it means that they keep more of your money to manage for longer.
Oh,
but you need to see the numbers to prove which is right in that situation, because it is a balance. If you are a young retiree or, you know, you want to wait till 70, yeah, you have to fill in the income gap and it's got to come from somewhere. So it is, it's a balancing act. And don't forget that your Social Security income is taxable. So there are a lot of things to consider here. So just weigh all of these things out when you're making that decision. And you might want to ask your financial advisor, you know, tell them point blank that you heard this here, that are you recommending I take Social Security now so I leave more of my money with you? I'd like to see their face.
And but yeah, check the response.
Yeah, yeah. It's a valid question, actually.
Well, and it's math. So mm-hmm. ask to see the math. We had a scenario this past year, last fall, Kate, where it was a client was recommended taking Social Security at 62 and then drawing down their 401k later. And we kind of ran the analysis and flipped that to where they basically bridged 62 to 70. Now, this isn't the case in all situations, but in this specific situation, by same pieces to work with on the table, just utilizing them a little differently, this client over their life expectancy had an extra $168,000 that would come back to them.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly strategy. It.
Yeah.
It can be quantified. And you also said a really important point. It's different in every situation. And, you know, there are cases, and you've probably run into these too, there are plenty of cases where people say, you know what? I would really rather just take my Social Security now, even though I'm 62, 63, 64. I've run into this. People that say, yeah, I'd rather do it now. Okay, let me run the numbers. Let me be sure you'll be okay if we do that. And often it's fine. Often it's fine, but you know, you have to have the conversation, crunch the numbers, look at how it fits into your plan, and not just make the strategy, not just make the move because you're scared it's going to go away. That's the worst reason, by the way. We could talk about that one all day, but I don't think we have time to, at least for the boomers. So, you know, you have to look at the numbers before you make that decision.
So we've hit on paying attention to longevity. We've talked about optimizing Social Security, and that needs to be a team decision, not an individual in a vacuum decision. What else, Kate, could we give our listeners that would be valuable to the women listening when it comes to preparing for retirement?
Yeah, I'm kind of very much of a stickler for understanding what's in your portfolio, why you own it, what's it designed to do? Because let's just call it what it is. Your portfolio is, it's not this game of who has more and beating the market. And again, I think some of that is falling away too, other than maybe the CNBC crowd. But for the most part, I think that idea is falling away. And people understand this money is here for me to live my life, to help me pay for the things that are valuable to me in my life, whether it's donating to charity, whether it's helping my family, whether it's just living a life that I believe is meaningful. And you know, you're very good at articulating these points, Beau, but that's really what it is. So, you know, we get people that walk in all the time with maybe a portfolio they inherited or maybe something that they had invested in themselves or with a traditional broker. And it's a bunch of single stocks. It's things that are highly risky. And people don't really know, because I'm sorry, but there's terrible, terrible advice out there in the financial media. Like you pick up one of these magazines and it's 10 stocks to buy in 2018. Well, I guarantee you the 2019 issue is going to be a whole different 10 stocks.
Right.
And that's because they can't just keep telling you the same thing year after year after year. And I'll give you a little example of something that happened in the media. I don't know if I told you this before when you were on my show, but it's a story I repeat a lot because it's just horrifying. I was on a panel out in San Francisco last summer with the former editor-in-chief of a major financial magazine that everybody knows the name of. And she actually sat there on the stage moderating this panel and admitted that she and her husband freaked out in 2008 and sold everything and locked in losses. And that is like the worst possible thing you can do. Yes, they should have rebalanced. Yes, they should have checked their holdings. They should have understood what they owned and why. But to just panic and sell everything out and then to just kind of wave your hand like it's no big deal. And that taught me a lesson, Beau. It said, be careful where you're getting your investment advice.
Absolutely.
They don't know.
and then we talk about the TV shows and some of the articles, sometimes they're actually, they're things that sell magazines or they're things that are interesting and fun to watch. It doesn't necessarily mean it's good strategy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Look, I worked at Investor's Business Daily for 10 years. I mean, I know how the sausage is made. And, you know, every single day I wrote a column or did a video, I was always focusing, not promoting, that's not the right word, but focusing on one single stock of the day that we would write about. You know, like you said, it's interesting. It's not bad to learn about companies, maybe learn a little bit how stocks trade and how markets work. But that is not financial advice. Just because you and I might be on here talking about, I don't know, Amazon, Facebook, Google, you name it, doesn't matter, doesn't mean that our listeners should run out and buy that. Doesn't mean it's right for them. So you really have to, coming back to the specific advice for women, and again, this applies to guys too, it really does. But again, for women who often say, I don't know enough about investing, I need to be educated. By the way, men never say that. Men never publicly say, I don't know enough, I need more education. Women always say that.
Right.
And while I think it's true, I also think don't let that hold you back. So, you know, if you hear somebody talking about Google, what a great buy it is, you know, look it up, figure that out. Say, do I really need this? Single stock risk is just through the roof. Let me give you an example of single stock risk. This is digressing a little bit, but I think it makes the point. I know somebody who a few weeks ago, right before the big allegations of Steve Wynn came out with the sexual harassment.
Right.
Yeah. He had wanted to purchase shares in Wynn, the casino company that Steve Wynn owns.
Right.
And he had wanted to do that the day before, Bo, the day before. And then the next day, those allegations broke. The stock dropped sharply. That's your risk of single stocks. Whereas if he had just said, oh, you know, I think I'll buy an S&P 500 index fund. Well, yeah, there's risk there too, but your risk is spread out among 500 stocks, not just one.
No, that's perfect. And one of the things that I think is important is that I think people are well served. And let me know your take on this. If they put 90% of their focus on controlling the things they can control and having a good strategy for retirement, and then 10% the investments, because the strategy is going to tell you what allocations you need, what buckets need what kind of money, and you get out of that game of chasing hot stories, chasing past performance, and all the things that really get people in trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Your portfolio is designed to help you address your future obligations, whether that's buying groceries, whether it's donating to charity, whether it's helping your grandchildren in college, it doesn't matter. Your portfolio is designed to address the spending needs that are important and necessary to you. So in that sense, you have to have the appropriate balance of risk and return. And yes, we know markets are volatile. As we're sitting here today speaking, markets are down sharply for the second day in a row because of this announcement of the trade, possible trade tariffs for steel and aluminum. There's always going to be something like that that happens. There always is. And the way our brains work, we're more keyed in on the negative rather than the positive, because markets go up, if you look at it on a yearly basis, something like 70, 75% of the time. But nobody remembers that. They remember the days that the market tanks because the president announces plans for a tariff on raw materials. So you have to really think about, I'm in this for the long term. Think about the fact that markets go up much more often than they go down. And what is it designed to do? And you need the sleep at night factor as well. If you are the Okay. kind of person that you're, you know, you panic when you see the markets doing what they're doing today, and you just can't take it, then you may want to ratchet down your risk a little bit. If you can ratchet down the risk and have fewer stocks and more bonds, for example, and still meet your future obligations, extrapolated out to age 100, remember, if you can do that, then that might be a good idea for you. But you also have to know the flip side is you're not going to make as much money when the equity markets are in rally mode. So there's always a trade-off. And this is the point of kind of coming back to what you originally asked me, where it is good for women to educate themselves a bit about some of this. And I think there's been this idea in the past, like, oh, you have to be a math major in order to understand markets. No, you don't. It's really common sense, and everybody can benefit from a little bit of market education. You don't have to be an expert.
And I throw in there too, look for a team, look for your financial team, your advisors that actually work to educate you. They're not just telling you what to do. You're not a passive participant in your own portfolio. In my opinion, it should truly be a co-creation where you're the active participant in that. You know, Kate, one of the sayings that's come up on the show for years is in the retirement game, the proactive win and the reactive lose.
Yeah.
And it just becomes something that sticks, but we need to, and that's kind of our thing. We talk about let's raise our retirement IQ so we can truly be the captain of our retirement ship. Sorry for all the metaphors. I'm just on a roll here. So that we're not this passive participant, that's when people put themselves in a position to make mistakes or be taken advantage of by people that don't always do what's in people's best interest. So if I could say anything with this, it's just make a commitment to raise your financial IQ or your retirement IQ specifically so that you're really in control of your retirement future.
And I think a corollary to that is if you're working with an advisor or a planner, you want to be able to call that person right. with questions. You know, I think it's a different thing. If you're truly, truly panicked on a day like today and you call that person, that's fine. But, you know, you shouldn't save your questions for days when the market is trading sharply lower and then call up in a panic. Right. You really should be asking some of these questions on an ongoing basis. What is this? Why do I own it? Why right. do you think this is the right portfolio for me to 100? Why do you believe this is the right time to take Social Security? Any of those questions, totally fair game.
You know, and clarity is the antidote for fear. There's a lot of fear around money, a lot of fear around the market, a lot of fear around those things. But just like you've driven home today, Kate, that if we have the right strategy and we know what we're doing and why we're doing it, when the market has a correction, we're okay because we know we're appropriately positioned for the ups and downs of the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what, you know, to reiterate something you said, if you're working with an advisor, that's the kind of thing you should really understand at all times, not just go on blind faith of, oh, you know, she bought General Motors for me, so it must be good. No, find out why. You know, sure. Nobody asks these. I mean, when people come into us with these kind of legacy portfolios, it's clear that nobody ever asks their advisor, why am I in this? They just accepted it on blind faith. And folks, you can't do that. You just can't.
Sure. Well, Kate, we've covered a lot. We've covered addressing longevity. We've covered making sure we're optimizing and paying attention to our Social Security strategy. And we talked about basically knowing our own strategy and focusing on strategy and having our plan, knowing our plan, knowing what we're doing and why we're doing it. I believe if women listening to this address those three areas, they're going to be ahead of 95% of retirees out there.
Oh, heck yes. Absolutely.
So I want to thank you, Kate, so much. I always love it. We have such a great conversation. And the part where we talked about raising your retirement IQ, ways to do that, I got a couple good ways. Continue to listen to the Retirement Resource. I'll continue to bring up topics, bring in guests like Kate, and also check out Kate's podcast, Better Money Decisions. Kate, do you have a place where they can find that?
Yeah, we actually have a website where we link up our podcasts. It's called Better Financial Decisions. It's actually our content site. Yeah. And there's a ton of articles up there, a lot of places we've been in the media. I'm sure you're on there a few times, Bo, different interviews we've done over the years. So yeah, betterfinancialdecisions.com. And then the RIA site is bettermoneydecisions.com.
Got it. So good. So Kate, thanks again. This has been a valuable episode and I'm so excited when we can just share not only insight from being in the field, meeting with clients for a number of years, but also just seeing both sides of it, seeing that we really need to integrate both. I think that's what really drew us together in the first place. We really need to address both the financial and non-financial aspects of planning and retirement planning. And I think that's what people are drawn to for our podcast as well. So look forward to having you back soon, because there's always a wealth of knowledge. I can call on you for any topic, and just appreciate you coming out.
All right. Thanks a lot. This has been fun as always.
All right. Well, guys, next show, we're going to be talking about how to build your financial team, how to build that team that's going to help you navigate that successful retirement. So we look forward to seeing you then right here on the Retirement Resource. Great conversation today, Kate. And on the next episode, we're going to be talking about building your retirement team for success. You don't want to miss it right here on the Retirement Resource.